Welcome back to another episode of ABA Mom. I'm your host, Allie, Mom of Five, and a board-certified behavior analyst. And today we have a very special guest, Maddie Senecal, who is a social worker who works directly in the school settings, and she also is my baby cousin. Maddie, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Yay. I'm so glad it's taken you a long time to get here, but I'm glad you're here.
Yes. Me.
The summer's off probably helped. Maddie, can you just share a little bit about your background?
Yeah. So I got my bachelor's in social work in May 2023, and I went directly into my MSW program where I concentrated in military and first responders mental health. And so through that, I had internships at the Department of Veterans Affairs, and I had two placements there. I worked at a geriatric clinic, so it was more like end-of-life planning and care, and then later on, I moved to an outpatient clinic that was meant for veterans who had severe and persistent mental illness. So I did home visits for veterans who had schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, multiple personalities, all the psychosis-related disorders. I don't know how I ended up in school social work after that, but I'm happy I did. So now my role is I'm an itinerant school social worker for Orange County Public Schools here in Orlando. And I travel between elementary schools and just help out where I'm needed.
I think that's great. And that's such a big jump from where you were to where you are now. But
yeah,
I'm glad that you're happy where you are. And I'm sure you help a lot of kiddos.
Yeah.
So what do you feel? So the role of like a social worker, how does your social worker or complement the behavior specialists that you work with at your schools?
So as a school social worker, our roles kind of complement the behavior specialists in a few ways. While behavior specialists are kind of focused on like the data collection, the behavior plans, and like interventions rooted in applied behavior analysis, I take a more holistic approach that includes like the emotional, the social, the environmental aspects of a student's life. So I kind of look at the why behind the behavior while you guys kind of look at the behavior. So I look at like what's happening at home, any trauma history, maybe any current stressors they're having or emotional needs that aren't being met. And together, we all form kind of a well-rounded support system. So like the ABA therapists bring the behavior tools and I bring the social emotional lens to the student.
I think that's really interesting when you said the why behind the behavior, because that's so like a different kind of spin on things too, because as a behaviorist, like we always look for the why, but our why is kind of just like what's observable versus yours right. is more of that social emotional aspect.
Right.
But they both are, you know, it's one person. And I think that both of those roles are really important.
Right. Yeah.
So you're collaboration. So how do you collaborate with teachers and staff at your school?
So that's collaboration is probably that is 90% of my job. We always say like Great. We're the bridge between like the home and the school because we're the only professional in the school that we do the home visits. We bring the parents in to talk to them about what the student's going through and what any problems they might be having. So with teachers, I check in regularly with to see how their students are doing, if there's any students that might have like slipped in a crack that we missed, how they're doing behaviorally, emotionally, academically. It has to be academically relevant for us to kind of intervene. So sometimes it's as simple as like a quick conversation. I'll stop them in the hallways and be like, hey, how's so-and-so doing? Or other times, like, we'll sit down together during an ESC meeting, and when it's over, we'll talk about certain students that we might need to schedule a meeting for in the future with their parents to kind of see, like, what's going on at home and then what we're seeing at school. So it's just checking in, seeing how certain students are doing. We just really, our goal is to make sure no one's overlooked in the school system, and unfortunately, that does happen a lot. Some teachers don't share stuff that they might, that they should share with us about certain kiddos, but I think we have a whole team at my schools, at least, that like really work together. And like, I'll go sit in a classroom just to observe and make sure there's no one missing. And most of our teachers are pretty good about letting us know.
No, I love that. And I think too, what you said, some teachers probably don't share. I think sometimes they just don't know what they should and shouldn't share too.
Right.
And I found myself when I used to work as a school behaviorist or behavior specialist, I used to just say like, well, why didn't you tell me that? I was like, oh, I didn't think that was important, but sometimes just, you know.
Yeah, and the term social worker, I think, scares a lot of people. Yeah. And, you know, like, I think a lot of people, and it's like a stereotype, but it's real. People think, like, oh, DCI, like, we're just all associated. And we are, like, we're all mandated reporters.
Right.
But at the same time, like, we're all a team. And, like, the teachers need to feel supported and heard, too. So, like, I don't know. It's just a balance that I feel like some schools are really missing out on, the working together part, and not seeing us as like scary people. Like, we're here to help too, you know?
Yeah. And I think that too, that you kind of bridge that gap between like the home life and the school life is really important, because, you know, some kids receive most of their support at school. So I'm glad that you're there to support those kids that really need that extra support in their lives. And hopefully it'll be a little less scary for the teacher.
Yeah, I know. And sometimes the parents need that too. They need to come right in and just like venting about their kid might help them for that day. So, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And the, yeah, right. It's parent support too. So it's not even just the kids support. Like, they just sometimes,
you know, that your mom.
Yeah, I get it. I want to be supported. So what would you say, or what are some support that you kind of provide families and resources that you have available for those that are struggling, or need guidance, whether that's kind of in the direction of more of like a counseling, or if it's like a financial situation that people are in?
Yeah. So I work closely with like the parents, the guardians, whoever's in the student's life, and connect them to resources. It's a lot of in-school resources, but we also, what I'm learning throughout social, I'm trying to build my resource, like the what I give out, you know, in the community. So that can include like mental health referrals for counseling agencies, food assistance, housing support, you name it. I also try to help families understand the school process, because there's a lot of acronyms in the school system that some people don't really understand. So like I'm a part of the ESC evaluation process. I do what's called a social history interview and a Vineland assessment, like independent living skills is what I rate. So like I help them understand that process, the ESC services we offer, and behavior plans, because they can be really confusing if you don't know the lingo and stuff. And it can be really overwhelming to navigate on their own. So a big part of my role is advocacy too. So like if a family's struggling, I want them to know that they're not alone. And I'll work together, if I can't do it myself, with other social workers or the counselors at the school, and see what in the community is out there to help, and then advocate for them to get those services. Some of the resources I share, the main one being Center for Autism and Related Disabilities, otherwise known as CARD. And here in Orlando, we have UCF CARD, because we're very close to the University of Central Florida. And I think in Flagler County, y'all's CARD is through UF Jacksonville.
Yeah.
And they offer all kinds of support and advocates. And in a lot of our ESC meetings, they bring a CARD advocate in with them to make sure like we're not doing wrong by them, like the family's interests are staying above all. And then another resource that is really, really new that not a lot of social workers or school members know is that now local public libraries offer free case management. So it can be over the phone, you can email them, you can go to the library during their open hours for walk-in services, and they can help you with like anything from like legal stuff and like support to food and housing assistance, and like they'll even walk you through how to fill out your taxes. So that's like a brand new thing that public libraries.
That's great.
I know.
That's, it's really so helpful.
Right.
Yeah. No, I love that too. And I think what you said, kind of just breaking that down a little bit for parents, because it does get very confusing, you know, like even just ESC or like 504 plans or like this assessment and all of these things, they mean parents just go, okay, so what do I need to do? And it's nice to just have an advocate for them. So
and
what are my resources? How can I get help?
Right. Because they're so used to like taking the reins in those meetings and trying, but like not understanding it, it's hard to take those reins. So these people are trained to fully know what we're talking about. And if we say one thing out of place, the advocates will come in and be like, actually, no, I think they'll better fit this. And then we'll take that under our umbrella to try to figure out how to make that happen. So they're great. I love them. They're pushy, but that's exactly what these families need.
No, I love that too. I know. And I love it because there's such like a wide different need for like different families. Like there's different resources for them. So it's nice to know that there's advocates available to be able to support those families and all the different needs that they have.
Right. Yeah.
So what do you feel for your job? What are some challenges that you face? And I know, I mean, listen, I'm very interested in what you did at the VA too.
I know.
If you share any of those challenges, I'd love to hear that as well.
Yeah. I mean, my challenges there are kind of tying together to my challenges here in the school system, is just like seeing just how many needs really exist for certain individuals and knowing I can't always meet all of those needs. Like that is something, I don't know, I come in just wanting to solve everybody's problems and like nobody can do that, you know? And sometimes I'm working with families who face so many barriers, whether it's like financial, familial issues, anything, but like homelessness and food insecurity. And it's hard when systems can be so slow or like the resources are so limited. It's so hard to help them fully when like it's not just us, like our hands are tied sometimes too.
Right.
Another challenge is just time. with, I have two schools and I have a lot of students that I'm trying to meet all the needs and the families. And I wish I could be in more places at once, but I try like prioritizing and triaging where I need to be. And like, there are very urgent matters, whereas some are not as urgent. So trying to figure that out. I'm still new to this job, so I know that comes with time and stuff, but yeah.
Yeah. And I think too, what you said, and I know families that sign up to get some different services and there's waiting lists. I mean, that's definitely a huge thing for families waiting for ABA services. It's like, okay, I'm on the waiting list and, you know, I finally get services and it's been 6 months. So, and I find that in other areas too, that there's just like this long waiting list. Like there's so many families that need help in different areas and there's such limited resources. So I definitely can see that as a challenge
Right. And when I was working for the VA, it's a government agency, a huge government agency. It is very much a hurry up and wait. So hurry up, fill in the application for this service to get, and then wait 4 months and you can get it. And like, that is so frustrating to me because it could be the most urgent matters, especially in the geriatric clinic I was in. Hurry up and fill this out. In 4 months, you can be in the place that you need now. Like it's not, sometimes it's just not fair. And we have learned in grad school how to take the heat from those people because they're frustrated. They don't know who to take it out on. So we kind of serve as like that person to take it for them so they don't have to feel themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's super fun. Nice?
Isn't that nice to be the
It is. I like it. I understand where it comes from, you know, so it makes it easier. They're not mad at me. They're mad at the system, you know?
Right. Yeah. But,
yeah.
Yeah, but you're absolutely right. Like that hurry up and wait. I know another issue too, along with like waiting for ABA services, is that there's the APD, so like the med waiver, like the waiting list for adult services. So not just in behavior, but just any kind of adult services. There's a waiting period for that too. And that like it could be, you know, a year, unfortunately, which is that's how it is, unfortunately. Hopefully that changes.
Yeah. And sometimes we get new students that need to be in an ESE program, you know, and our evaluations alone, it's not just me, it's our school psychologist, it's our MTSS coordinator. We need all this data to get them in the right program. And I think people like it's a lot of work that goes into it, along with our whole other caseload of counseling and everything else. So we have a 90-day timeline. And that's a long time to wait to be in the right program they need to learn the best and to educationally thrive. So I get why they get impatient. I totally do.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's true. I just tell families that I work with, you know, and it's like their needs sometimes are outside of like my scope of practice, but I just tell them, you know, as far as the school, like make sure you're advocating. Some of the parents like find their own advocates and they have advocates come to their IEP meeting. And sometimes it is just a waiting, like there's just no room. And
I know
I've had students have to like go to a different school because there's no room at this school in this
ESE program. Right. And it's not that people are sitting there and sitting there on like doing nothing, you know, our staffing specialist has 8 meetings scheduled per day. And sometimes with like really angry families, sometimes with meetings that take a little bit longer, you know, so it's not like they're sitting waiting, you know,
right.
Or trying.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's probably frustrating on both ends, unfortunately, I was just going to say, I can relate to that, those challenges for sure. So we talked about the challenges. What are some success stories that you've had?
With my job, we have a lot of little like small wins, which I'm very, very grateful for. They mean the world to me. One that kind of stands out to me involved a student that was in our ASD program. He also had diagnosis of ADHD and ODD, which is oppositional defiant disorder. And this student was really struggling with like emotional regulation. He had frequent episodes of aggressive behavior that often led to our school resource officer having to come in and do some techniques to calm him down. So while he was receiving support both inside and outside of school, we kind of recognized that any of the programs we offered just weren't meeting his like individual needs. So as a team, it took forever, but we spent months and months collaborating with his family, specialists, with CARD, and all of our higher up district staff to kind of advocate for a more supportive placement, because there are schools that would meet his needs a lot better. And that could truly help him thrive academically, behaviorally, in all aspects. And we ended up getting him in. It was the first time I kind of got to witness an entire school team getting together along with his like super dedicated parents. They were very involved, coming to everything. My role was to stay in contact with them throughout that whole process. So I saw the angry side. I saw the grateful side at the end. I saw all of it. So I think seeing all of that come together was my biggest win so far. And it kind of reminded me like why this work matters, because when we can like all collaborate like that, we made a really big change. And from what I've heard from the social worker at his school now, he's doing great. So yeah, just seeing people end up where they're split, where they like are meant to go and can do better there. That I love seeing that. I think that's my biggest success.
No, it's great. And just like a change in environment and like in a change in support can make such a like help kids thrive. So I love that.
Right.
Love that.
Right. And seeing like parents like the weight come off their shoulders when we have answers for them, like that seeing that to me is like that means the world. Like, and it's a whole team like that sees it happen, and it's a relief for us too to see the parents get what they originally came to us for.
I love that story. I love it. I love seeing like any like small success, because I say, you know, small successes are still success, and like it's a huge thing. And like if he is thriving and like doing well at a new school, sometimes just like that change in placement or change, like, you know, change in environment, change in support, all of those things.
Right. Kind of, like, and it's stuff as big as that, but it's also stuff as big as like even just moving to a different teacher can bring that same.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So little changes too mean a lot.
Yeah, I've seen that too. Just like not the right. And I've seen like where the personalities just clash. And I remember one time, like I told like a mom, I said, so it's like, I don't know why she did so great last year. Like, I don't know why this year. And I said, yeah, so I think the teacher's personality and her personality are too similar. Right.
Which is fine. No one's doing anything wrong in that scenario. Like, no one's doing anything wrong. Like, just some people, as adults too, like we don't fit in with some people, you know? So yeah.
Right. Yeah, some people, you know, I work better with than others. So same, I expect the same, you know, from a kid too. So.
Right.
And then
real life practice.
Right. Yeah. So is there anything else, Maddie, that you kind of just want to share with our listeners today?
Yeah, just that if you're a parent or a caregiver listening, please don't hesitate to reach out to your school's support team, whether it's a super tiny concern or something bigger, we're here to help. And it really does take a village, and you are not supposed to do it alone. We want every child to feel safe, seen, and supported, both in and out of school. And every family deserves to feel empowered. So don't hesitate to reach out to your school. Even if you think it's a tiny little thing that could change, it could make their academic journey a whole lot better. So please don't be scared to reach out, because that is what we're all here for in the school system.
Yeah. I love that too. And I love it. And that's kind of what we kind of leave off on too. It's just like, you're not in this journey alone. So, you know, the whole idea really with this podcast doing this is hopefully having those resources. So I thank you so much for sharing that, because I think it's so important to the families and like professionals that we work with to know that it's out there and nobody has to be alone.
No, we're all learning together. It's not. Yeah,
exactly. All right. Well, thank you for another episode of ABA Mom. If you like this episode, make sure to subscribe.